David Ossington is in the Pocket is sponsored by the School of Rock Mainline and Kroger Percussion. I'd like to thank the School of Rock Mainline, located at 511 Old Lancaster Road in Berwyn. You can visit their website at schoolofrock.com. Ask for Dave Marsh or Rick Allison. I'd like to thank Kroger Percussion at krogerpercussion.com at /ITP, and it'll bring you to a website. You'll get a 5% discount. Call Eric Metz at 215-669-8588. That's KrogerPercussion.com.
Welcome to the David Ossington is in the Pocket podcast. I am thrilled with today, because we are not only joined by my co-host Freddie B, but we are honored. Ooh. With the presence of the one and only, the professor, Mr. Wally Smith. Wally.
Thanks, Davey.
Man, listen, man, it's been too long. It's been too long, man. I mean, we've been doing this. I think that we've got like over 100 podcasts, and I haven't had you on yet, and I see you all the time.
Yes.
Play, you're like a fixture, you know, in my life, and probably Freddie's as well.
Yes.
I mean, as much with Fred, but, you know, over the years, I'm sure you have.
Absolutely. So
it's really great to have you join us, man, you know. And
thank you. Thanks, Davey.
It's awesome. How's everybody doing? Everybody good today?
Yeah, man.
Yeah. Hey, listen, I was thinking about this because, you know, Wally, like I said, we play in a couple bands together. And I realize there's so much that I don't really know how you really even started with your playing. And I mean, we don't have to get into all that, but I know what's really cool, what's happening right now, is that you have this really great idea that you've been talking about for a while, that you're doing a residency over there at 118 North.
Yes, I am.
And which has you bringing in various people. Every Sunday night from 4 to 6 o'clock, you do this?
Yeah, and 4 to 6:30.
Yeah.
It's been the last couple of Sundays. It's going to be this coming Sunday, February 6th. And then, of course, we're off for Super Bowl and a couple other bookings that they already had lined up from months back. So then I'll be back for the whole month of March. So I'm doing this Sunday coming up, February 6th. And then, again, we're going to do all four Sundays in March.
So basically, what's really super cool about it, Fred, I don't know if you heard, he's like, comes in, he's got different guys that he's plays with out all the way up to, you know, whenever you know,
besides playing piano and synth, a good portion of my life has been based on playing Hammond organ. My father was a Hammond player and a collector.
I didn't know that. I had no idea.
I knew who, you know, Jimmy Smith was. I knew, what Hammond organs were all about by the time I was in first grade. So Hammond was like a really important thing for me. My Model A, which is a 1937, was sitting here, rarely used, just my home studio, like a couple times in like the last 10, 12, 15 years. So before I got to a certain age number, which we won't mention, I decided, I looked at it, I was like, okay, I'm breathing. We're going to get some life into this thing. So I found the repair guy in Philly. It took a long time because basically all the Hammond techs are dead or retired.
Wow.
So since this instrument is a 1937 model, it took a while for me to find the guy, a local guy. He did some repairs on it, and I decided I was going to put it back out in the club. It's living at 118 North.
Nice. So you moved that. It's not a cut down. It's a B3.
It's 425 pounds. My my lumbar disc is like screaming at me.
So, would you hire a crew to move that over? Did you brought it over, right? You did the whole.
I had to pay twice. I had to pay to move it from my home studio to North Philly, where the tech center was, and then I had to pay again. With the Leslie that I just bought, a 122 Leslie. Ooh. I had to pay to have them move to the venue. So now they're living in the venue, and then the goal is to like rotate different rhythm sections.
Oh, that's cool.
Especially like a different guitar player and yeah. drummer team. Like, for example, last week we had Kevin Hansen and Eric Johnson from Huffamoose.
Yeah.
I used to play with those guys in the 90s all the time. And literally, it's been 25 years since we played. So
Wally, news to Wally, news flash. You've played with everybody. Everybody. There's nobody you haven't played with, man.
Oh.
I mean, you're even with the School of Rock thing that you do with the teaching there, as long as you've been doing it, I mean, you covered, it's like I probably got a Guinness Book of World Records of musicians that you play with. Because it's pretty remarkable, man.
I've been busy because you know, early on I realized the way to get better and the way to have more freaking fun in life is by playing with as many people as you can. And especially you try to play with older people, more experienced people. That's why, if you remember, like when you guys were up at In the Pocket years ago, 5-6 years ago, you were at Ardmore Music Hall, and I just stood right in front of you, my arms crossed. And every once in a while, I'd be like, "Hey, Dave." And then when you took a break, I was like, "You know, I've played with everybody on stage. I've been with everybody on stage. I should be playing with you."
And Wally.
You went like this. You went, "Yeah, I guess you should be playing with us."
You know what's funny about that is that you say 5 years. I think we've been doing it for almost, I think we're coming up on 11, 12 years, something like that. It's always longer.
Yeah.
Than, you know, kind of funny we've been doing it because I feel like you've been with us all along. You know, I forget how long. You forget. I guess that's a byproduct of what was happening with us, fellas, as you start getting a little older. But, I think as you stay active like you're doing, you know, like everybody says active, it works the brain in our favor, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you have to, you know, you use it or you lose it, you know.
Yeah. And keep all that stuff moving up
there. Yeah.
I think I interrupted you when you were talking about, because you mentioned about all these different plays. You played with Kevin and Eric last week, who Eric was on our podcast talking about it. A few weeks ago, right, Freddie?
Yeah, the last episode, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, and he mentioned...
What was really funny was when Eric came walking into the venue Sunday, he comes walking up, and like I haven't seen him or played with him in 20, 25 years. He walks up, he said something like, "Oh, yeah, this will be fun. Yeah, it was cool last..." Like it's like we looked at each other like we had just done a gig last week.
I know.
Like it was literally a week ago, and it had been 20, 25 years. And then everybody just slid right into it. Like
no time
was gone. We all knew exactly how to read each other with that kind of like intuition.
Yeah. I mean, that's what makes
great players. I mean, those guys.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we were affectionately called Half a Moose for the night.
Perfect.
I had a session yesterday with our friend Brendan. The primary instrument with these sessions, he's 15 years old, Dylan Zangwill, and he plays, his primary instrument is a B3. He's got you know, when I get together with him at his place, he has a B3 organ with a Leslie spinning. He plays guitar and he plays organ. But, you know, that's the flavor of the day. You know, every track
we do. Here we go. Here it is. There's a tone wheel.
Yeah.
Double metal disc deal. That's what spins next to an electromagnetic pickup. There's 91 of these in the Hammond spinning. So that's why you oil the organ.
Wow.
So your dad was we used to maintenance for organs and.
My father was the Ampex dealer for the tri-state area.
Oh, I think you told me about that.
In the 50s and 60s, he was the guy that sold all the early 56. Ampex machines to Frank Virtue and all the studios and Reco Art, Emil Corson.
Right.
He was mainly audio, and then he branched into video, and then he became the first big Sony dealer in the area. So on the side, he tinkered with Hammond organs. I grew up surrounded by these organs coming and going, and you know, the variations of them, the Model A's and the B's.
Right. I think I knew that.
Rob Hyman was telling me that, you know, because he, you know, Rob collects and he's got a bunch of them. But he was telling me you really know the inside, you know, in the in and outs of the organ, the thing. He goes, you know, he said, Wally, he gave you your due. He said, Wally knows more about this stuff than I do. That's what he said. It's cool.
These old vintage instruments, whether you're a drummer and you have to come up with parts for the kit, or a guitar player with a good luthier that you work with, if you're playing these good old vintage instruments, you have to do your homework. You have to research. You have to know how to maintain them and keep them going. You know, just like we're supposed to be exercising and eating right and all that as we get older, the same with the gear. You got to take care of that gear if you want to keep making music. Now, if you think about it, this organ that I'm playing at this at 118 North, it's 80 plus years old.
Wow.
That's pretty serious. Yeah. And it's still hanging tough. It's still making the noise is sounding pretty damn good.
Wow.
So
wow,
I'm loving it at this point in life, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. A lot of fun, man, Wally.
You're
that
coming
seems
up too, you know. You're going to be, I got you booked up there March 6th. You and me, Kenny Aronson and Greg Sover. It's going to be Chicago Blues night.
All right, on. Nice. I got to stop breaking my foot.
Oh.
I'm in. I'll be fine. Listen, I played yesterday, but, it, you know, that's the look, you know, just not being, I was careless. But yeah, we'll be good.
We got to get Freddie in there somehow.
Yeah,
Freddie and I have done years.
We did a bunch. We logged a lot of time together in the late 90s down on Delaware Avenue. Remember that gig we had?
Well, Rock Lobster.
Yeah, that was it. You, me.
That was crosstown. That was the extension of crosstown traffic.
Exactly.
But Greg had gone to Japan. Ronnie went to the West Coast. Right. But I kept the account going through Rick Green. He's the guy that booked that room.
Yeah.
I was there for 12 years with all these variations of players, and you were part of that scene.
We did it for quite a few years. You, me, Chico on bass.
Chico, Jay Davidson.
Yep. That was a lot of fun. You were probably in San Diego.
Yeah, so when you did this, it was fun. It's funny. There was a whole period of time when I was out there from 1990, 20 years, you know, from 1990 on.
Wow.
And I think about when you were doing these gigs, was there somebody – was there someone fronting the band? How did that work?
The Crosstown Traffic concept started in the early 90s, basically as a place to keep the organ. I had lived at 44th and Sanson. It was moving. And that was my little corner Irish U of P bar that used to be a cop bar back in the days. And I knew the guys there. So I was like, Harry, can I leave my organ in the corner there? You know, and he goes, sure, I guess so. Can you give me Tuesday nights? He goes, all right. So next thing I know, I'm playing with Greg Davis and Ronnie Crawford on this regular killer Tuesday night for like 5 or 6 years that would pack the room.
Wow.
And from there, then we ended up doing gigs, various other venues in town. We got the Rock Lobster account. And so when I didn't have the Hammond, because when I play the Hammond, I'm trying to do that left-hand bass thing.
Yeah.
Kind of like the jazz organ trio, but from a rock mindset. When we would play Lobster, who do we put on bass? Chico Huff.
Yeah, it was great. Great fun, man.
So a three-piece became a four-piece.
Right.
Wow.
Various guitar players.
Well, you know what's interesting about that, too? So you were doing all those gigs, and then, I mean, for years you've been playing with Steve Butler, too. I mean, because I hear Steve joke about it on stage, but...
Well, Steve and I were we were housemates for a while in the mid-70s at the inception of Quincy. And Quincy got that CBS deal.
And that's a whole nother lifetime, you know what I mean? Think about that, Fred. It's like wild. Doing all these other things. I mean, you really got you got a lot of barnacles on the ship, man.
Yeah, you know? That was my period when I was known as Metro.
So... Real quick, just tell the story, and I guess I've heard it before, how you guys hooked up with CBGBs and got managed by Hilly. Just clip notes.
If you guys remember in the mid-70s, it might have been 74, 75, CBGBs put out a Live at CBGBs Volume 1. I think it was a double vinyl. Somewhere maybe 76 or 77, they had a big, large ad in Village Voice that said CBGBs will be recording 60 or 80 bands over the next month. for, you know, selection of their Live at CBGB's Volume 2 album. So Quincy, newly formed, you right. know, off with stars in our eyes.
Was this 78, 79?
No, this is 80. Probably 77, 78. Wow. Somewhere in that. So, we saw that ad. It said, come to New York and audition at CBGB's. Well, we went up to see, we got a date, one of multiple bands, went up there, we did our thing, you know, and we were just like to the wall, like we were like so charged up. Hilly Crystal, at the end of our gig, our set, says, you guys stay, I want to talk to you. At the end of the night, he took us to Phoebe's, which was this restaurant around the corner, and he was like,
oh, that's cool.
He's like, I'm not doing the album with the other bands, I'm booking you guys, I'm getting you guys a deal. And he abandoned the whole project because he decided that he wanted to roll with Quincy. So he immediately would bring all the people out, put us in, open for XTC and all kinds of bands. I remember we used to play sometimes with the Bloodless Pharaohs with Brian Spencer and his brother.
Wow, yeah. You did? Wow.
That was
Bobby Stardust's band, right?
They were a great band. They were really great. But so Hilly was the one we really owe our existence, Quincy, and then henceforth Smash Palace. It all came out of the fact that this one cat who ran that club loved us, and he was so good to us.
Now tell the unfortunate name story.
Quincy was named Quincy because before I met the band, they were more of when we had the band together, we were very new wave, late 70s. We were very
You were a band of the time.
Post punk, all the meter was so fast that it was all about dancing and everything. But before that, the Quincy guys, you know, the two sets of brothers at the time, they were kind of like more like, I'm not saying Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, but very big on the vocals and more mellow, more acoustic guitar. And they apparently there's a girl that used to dance for them named Quincy, or she was called Quincy Girl. And they wrote a song about her, Quincy Girl. So at one point during the need for a name change, they picked the name Quincy. So it had no real mental bearing on the quality of the music or anything. But fast forward, we're on tour. We're opening for the Vapors. We're going to go play to Whiskey A Go-Go in L.A. Yeah. What happens as soon as we get to the airport and arrive, we're hit with an injunction. And it's from Quincy Jones saying, cease and desist the use of the name Quincy. Or we'll be royally sued. So we had it for a short period of time because we were still on tour. We had to call ourselves the Quincy Band, I think.
Only way he got away with that was because of the record label, right?
So we were like,
You mean the record? He threatened to never work with the record label if they didn't take care of it.
The label was all like, this is what you're doing. And our management at the time said, this is what we're doing. So we became Lulu Temple.
Yeah.
Go figure. And put out one record as Lulu Temple. So that's also Quincy, just with a different name.
Wally, that was Chris Evans, right?
No, Chris, I think, was one of the people that might have been related to Epic or something that was in the hunt for a deal. But we went with CBS, our A&R guy was Paul Atkinson, former rhythm guitarist. Here's the funny big circle. The Zombies guitarist was our guy back there at CBS, and he was a great proper British gentleman. But now Steve Butler, who has the lineage of Quincy as the master behind Smash Palace, he's doing his Rogers Butler tour, opening for the Zombies.
Right.
10 or 11 dates coming up in another month or two.
I think it got moved.
So isn't that a weird little circle? Connected to the Zombies in the 70s, connected to the Zombies now. So that's great for Steve.
Did he produce your records?
Paul Atkinson did not. He was A&R. The first record was a guy named Tim Friesgreen. I forget what he did.
Okay.
And the second one was a team. It was Bob Clifford and a couple other guys.
Okay.
It was the guy that used to play guitar, the guy that played the lead on Be What You Want to Be, But Be What You Are by Hall & Oates.
Hall & Oates, yeah.
Chris Bond.
Oh, yeah. He produced Hall & Oates.
Yeah, they produced the part two Quincy, which was the Lulu Temple stuff.
Right.
But, you know, so everything keeps going, you know, so I didn't play the scene for about a decade. And then I went and saw him at Tin Angel one night, and I did the same thing I did to you. You know, I just stood in front of him, you know, while I was playing. And I was like,
the Wally move.
Like me, what? Yes, yeah. And he's like, what are you saying? I'm like, I can play a couple tunes with you guys sometime. It would sound good. And he goes, yeah, it probably would.
I love that.
So early on, you know, it was just, oh, we got a special guest. Wally was in Quincy with me. You know, he's going to play two songs. That's how that started. And lo and behold, I'm like the guest that won't leave.
Oh, no, it's great. It's great. You know, it's funny that you mentioned Atkinson, because Paul Atkinson, I did an album with him with the Hooters, too. He ended up being like he worked a large, vast group of artists. You know, that guy was something. He was very
great.
Nice.
And he was great. He ended up with Capitol out in L.A., and I know that because I used to work with Esra Mohawk.
Right.
And she ended up out there, and she was like, gave me a call. She's like, Wally, I can't believe it. I'm sitting out here talking to Paul Atkinson, and he loves you. You guys were old buds from years ago. So all these circles, everybody knows each other.
Wow. Right. So you've played with Steve. You've played with, you know, really, you're coming up, I hate to say it, it's like 50 years.
Yeah, that's right? True. Well, playing the Crosstown Traffic gig, that's how I met Tommy Conwell, because Greg would have to sub out the guitar position. And this is like a little Irish bar in West Philly.
Right.
Perfect for Tommy. He just sit on the stool.
Right.
We'd bring Chico in on bass.
Uh-huh.
Crawford on there, you know, and I had the Hammond there, and we'd just do straight Chicago blues and let's try this, you know. So that's kind of where I got to know Tommy, just informally there.
Right.
And then at the time, Freddie was probably playing with him in the Little Kings, right?
That was the mid-90s.
Oh, man.
Yeah, it's about the same period. It's about
I think it was.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's really remarkable.
Tommy is so versatile, man.
Yeah.
The first gig I ever did with him was a jazz gig at JJ's Grotto with me, Tommy, and Tyrone Brown on bass.
Wow,
Tyrone.
Crazy. He can play anything.
He can.
Here's somebody that we have to mention, George Manning. George Manning, definitely. George absolutely. He was a really important guy to me. I mean, like when I came out of Quincy and when that band broke up, Quincy and Lulu Temple broke up, I was living in New York at the time. I moved back to Philly. I was born in Philly. I love Philadelphia. So I was like, let me come back here and kind of see where I'm going musically. George knew that I wasn't being a pushy guy and I wasn't like an arrogant ex-New York rock and roller with an attitude. He was like, oh, this guy can play. Let me see if I can get him some work. So George came to me and he goes, I like your vibe. I like what you do. I want to do some things with you. Like, first off, he says, I can get you a gig playing in this band with a guy named Ken Queter. Because at the time, Ken was working with Chris Larkin, you know, the Tom and Jim show. And those guys were like fire and water. Remember Professor Irwin Corey, you can take the water put the fire under the water and boil the water, or take the water and pour it on top of the fire and put it out. Well, that was Larkin and Queter. They were just canceling each other out.
Yeah.
So I kind of swooped in and became his new keyboard guy for a while. That led to George saying, let's do a Tuesday night project where we just got some great players, not really about the vocals. We can sing, you know, whoever wants to sing can sing some, but it was primarily about what we all like to do as boys. We like to play our instruments and we like to jam and make noise and like shred. And you want people to go, oh man, you killed it. You were tearing it up last night. Well, that's what the last bit of jam was. That's how I met my best bud in Philly, Greg Davis. Greg Davis and I started our relationship hanging on that Tuesday night thing.
Yeah.
Michael Radcliffe,
One
of the best bass players in town. George Manny. So that went for a decade.
That's fun.
That was a really instrumental thing. Because if you think
about year and what were the years? When did you do that? What year was that?
Well, it started at Khyber for half a year in 86.
Oh, okay.
And then January of 87 is when it really kicked in at Bob's.
Okay.
And if you think
86, I was away. I remember, you know, the Hooters got signed. We went on tour. I was like away for five. You know how that goes. You go out, you're on the road. You don't know what's happening. We come back. It's like, oh, that's going on. So I, I, I remember before that I would hang out at Dobbs a little bit because of Joey Wilson and stuff, but I didn't.
Right. Joey, yeah.
I wasn't really even aware of that. It's great knowing about this kind of stuff because
Dobbs was so important because it was like, I always called it the living room. It was that relaxed. It was a great, huge network of extended friends who are still connected to this day. Those of us that still remain, we've lost many, many people from the whole South Street community.
And, you know, real quick, I want, you know, because we're kind of going around a bit, which is fine. This is what we do. You sent me a few MP3s, and then you have something from Quincy there. I'd like to play.
Yeah, it's the one song of mine that I wrote for that first album.
Awesome.
Brian Butler was kind enough to sing it for me because I didn't feel solid enough there.
Oh, great, great. Taylor, can we cue that up? Can we play a bit of that?
Roman Catholic.
Roman Catholic. Great title.
It's my farewell to having gone to Catholic school.
It's really cool. So that was that Bobby on drums?
Great drummer.
Bob Holden on drums.
Yeah.
Great drummer. Bass.
Yeah. Who was playing bass?
Gerald
Edmonds. Wow. That's great. I love it. You can almost hear the time period of that. You know? And then I'm thinking, what is that? Is that in four? What's going on there? That's cool.
Yeah, it's like, just an odd beat.
Odd rhythm, man. That's cool. I loved it.
Well, the drum beat came from me jamming with a guy named Jimmy Meneses. He was the drummer with Stickman, if you remember Stickman.
Well, you brought him. I met Jimmy through you. Yeah, well, actually, I met Jimmy when the Hooters played with – we did a show, believe it or not. It was the Stickman Gang of Four. And the Hooters played at Irvine Auditorium. Yep. Irvine Auditorium, and yep. I met Jimmy there. Well, Jimmy played a wild style.
Played a combination prog and free jazz.
I met him through you as well, Wally. Yeah. Probably, I think, at Rock Lobster.
Nice guy.
We had a nice trio with a guy. There's a great guitarist in Philly by the name of Tim Motzer.
Yeah.
Tim is one of them loop guys that has, you know, it's like Tim... guitar, an amp, and 60 pedals, and he knows what to do with it to keep it going.
Yeah.
So you mentioned the Stickmen, because I remember really digging them. I thought they were so interesting because they were so different. They were different than anything you were saying. You know, because bands could have an existence, but it may be not happening here. They go to France or wherever they go, and they're over there for years.
They were a victim of the times. I mean, they were so stylized with their super fast punk funk style.
And the
band was really driven by the main front man, who was Peter Baker, the guitarist.
Yeah,
and Peter was just like brilliant, but he was too almost not abrasive, just too intense. Like, people would be like, whoa, that guy's like way too intense. He was amazing. He was fantastic. And he died way too young. He died pretty young. So.
Oh, I didn't know that. So, yeah. I mean, it's hard to go on with a band when the force in the band, but everybody in that band were really terrific.
Hey, here's another name for you. One of your buddies that works for you and In the Pocket, Ben Arnold. You know, we lived together. Oh. We were housemates for about 6 years.
Right. I went to Europe with him, didn't you? I went to Europe
with Joseph Parsons, who was housemate there. But I did some tracking, I think, on Ben's first record. So we're always, you know, we've always been hanging out in a big circle again, you know.
Gordon played with you then. Gordon Townsend, too. Didn't he play?
Gordon went to Germany with us with Joseph Parsons.
Wow.
He was a fun guy on tour.
Wait. You must tell the Larry Ferrari story.
Oh, Larry Ferrari
in Germany. So, please.
So Joseph Parsons' band, we're in Berlin, Germany. And it was a rare two-keyboard band. It was who's the other guy? I can't even remember. We're in this bar called Schokoladen in Berlin. We could have gone and seen like some classical thing or gone to this bar. We're like, let's go to the bar.
Yeah.
And then there on the wall.
Of course you went to the bar, Wally. Yes. We could have gone here or we could have went to the bar.
Oh, my God. That's a great story. Oh, he's got a picture of the picture. I love it.
Oh, my God.
Larry Ferrari.
The man.
Was it behind the bar?
Yeah, it was behind the bar, and I'm looking at it.
The picture is behind the bar in Germany. I'm
going, that's a picture of Larry Ferrari. Like, only Philadelphia people know who that is. And the bar, it says, "Welcome, Schokoladen. We swing both ways."
Oh, my God.
Anyway,
that's crazy.
Like, we're talking to the bartender. I'm like, you have no idea what this connection means, because we're all from the Philly area. This guy was a Philly legend. And then I have to square the story by saying, okay, it's time I told you guys the truth. Since my father had this Sony dealership store in Cherry Hill, Jersey, Larry Ferrari apparently had stopped by on his way to – he was hired to play a private party at Cherry Hill. So he had stopped by, like, oh, let me see what we got here, Ampex dealership. He got to talking about Hammonds and Leslie's, and my father had – 31H, which was the tall boy, especially Leslie, for sale. And he gave us the address. So about 11:30, 11:45, my parents roused me out of bed at like age 9, 10, or 11.
Oh, you told me this story too. I love it.
Yeah, Larry Ferrari's here. We want you to play a duo with him. And I'm like,
what? Like,
no.
Wow. You said no?
Covers over the head, you know?
And you passed?
No, I went. I sat. I played the Hammond, and he played the piano.
Oh my God,
incredible. Yeah, we had a Steinway grand. We had the Hammond organ there. So Larry, with that weird face, that weird pseudo creepy face, like this, looking over at me, he's playing the piano, and we played Sonny, Bobby Hebb's song.
Nice.
You know, and I'm thinking like, am I awake? Am I asleep? What's going on? And I'm in my pajamas playing the organ. He's playing the piano, and then like, okay, nice meeting you, sir. And he's like, yeah, you're going to be a keyboard player when you grow up. So that was, of course.
Oh, man.
I didn't go to school the next day and say, hey, guys, I played with Larry Ferrari. I never really said anything about it. But now that I'm in Germany, and this picture is there, I'm like, no, not only do we know this guy, I played with him when I was like a kid, you know. So the owner comes out now.
Drinks on the house.
Yeah, gives us all copies of the poster and everything. So again, that great circle where stuff.
Listen, never underestimate the Germans. I mean, I make a living. Germany is our home away from home. You know, it's like
Germany. Germany's great.
It's amazing. That's great. Hey, so Steve Butler sends me a text and he goes, ask Wally about David Bowie and Frank Zappa.
Oh, I don't remember. Well, one of the greatest clubs in Philly was the London Victory Club.
Yeah.
10th and Chestnut, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great because Warren Brown, the owner, he had like a cable car across the dance floor. And and sometimes he'd have his daughter Allegra in the cage doing the official 60s dancing in the cage above the dance floor. But sometimes he would put on a full gorilla suit. And he would like strap himself in. He'd be hanging over the dance floor. So it was, you know, it was a great club for the times. Apparently, Frank came and was hanging out.
He was with my wife.
He was hanging out in our dressing room.
Dallin brought him there that night. you believe that is Wally. That's such a crazy story.
Crazy.
He stopped in. Frank Zappa stops in Lickety Split. They were closed. The kitchen was closed. So Dallin said, "I'll make." He said, "Just can anybody know how to make a butterfly steak?" Or something like, can, yeah. And Dallin says, well, I know how to do that. And she went in, she made him dinner. And then he said, is there a place where we can, a club I can go to? She goes, yeah, I know a club we can go to. And then his, got in the limo, he was with a limo, there was the, he had a limo with a bodyguard. And they, all three of them, went to the London Victory Club to see you.
Nice.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I remember he was apparently hanging out in the dressing room, but do I remember any personal contact? No. But the Bowie story is, you know, Quincy was at another great club back in the day, was called Hurrah, 72nd in Amsterdam, in Manhattan. It was a great. We opened for Squeeze back then, but we opened for Ultravox, and Ultravox was this hipster synth band with an electric viola player. So who's going to go to that? David Bowie. So we had heard from our manager that Bowie was probably in the audience to check out Ultravox. Maybe we could meet him. Well, that never happened until the end of the night. Girl I was dating at the
time. Oh, I know this story.
Girl I was dating at the time.
Keep going.
We're leaving, walking down the hallway. And then all of a sudden she sees him in the hallway and screams and goes flying through the air and, you know, sort of lands on him and boom, knocks him on the ground.
Oh my God.
And now I'm over there picking him up going, I'm sorry, Mr. Bowie, let me help you up. And he's just going to her. He's going, I have to go see me mom. It's okay. I have to see me mom now. Bye. Farewell.
Oh my God.
So it was just like, I didn't get to talk to him about Brian Eno or any of the cool questions I would have had, you know?
Oh God.
So, and you know, later on, he was so mysterious. That later on, now you realize that, you know, he was much more normal than people really knew. I mean, I actually bought into him from another planet. I swear to God, you know, the stuff that he did and just kind of way they marketed him, you know, it was just a genius mind getting his message out there. You know, I mean, who would have thought, you know, so it's crazy. Awesome conversation.
I gave you a Smash tune, but I also gave you like a little quickie cassette recording of some of Crosstown Traffic at this bar with the Hammond and everything, because it's kind of representative of sort of some of the stuff we're doing now.
Since you have the residency happening and all that's going on, why don't we cue up a little bit of that there, Taylor? So can give people a little flavor of what's happening with Wally on his Sundays.
Yeah, I don't know.
Hi.
And of course, play it now.
Crawford playing drums there.
Ronnie was the guy for this. Yep. Later on in that song, there's a really nice solo where we do this repeating figure, descending figure that keeps repeating, and it's one of those ways of setting up a drum solo without it just being just drums. I always like a drum solo over a repeating figure.
If
you remember Stratus by Billy Cobham.
Oh yeah.
There's a cool little repeating groove that happens for a drum.
Or Asia. You're Asia. What Gad does with Asia when they're playing that figure, that's always, to me, keeps a solo really interesting. Although I must admit that lately, I guess in my older age, you know, I think this way because I, from giving lessons to younger people, and they're kind of curious about people like Ginger Baker and John Bonham. So I've kind of gone back. So I, cause like there's a song, and you guys got to check it out. But the Cream had a song called Cream had a song called I don't even know if I've ever pronounced it correctly. Slobber. You know, if you dissect it, so
one of my like a brilliant rainbow, right? Or something like that.
Yes, yes. But it is absolutely well. Kenny recently posted the demo where Ginger plays through everything. Like a lot of drummers, like before you get the hits and the figures to figure, they're playing. He's playing a bass drum. It's almost going playing right through it. But then they worked out the parts, and Ginger plays some of the most outrageous fills.
He was blah, great.
Boom, blah, boom, blah, boom, boom. And the classic Baker fills.
Beware, and, Mr. Baker.
Oh, yeah. And then he plays there's a part in the song that really just blows my mind, where he's playing the verse, and it goes into the – there's like a theme of the song, ba-bum, 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 that he plays, but he starts – he starts the figure on, if you're counting it four, on three. And it's the craziest thing, Fred, as a drummer, when you listen to it, because you got to almost like put your mind in, because my instinct is to feel it like on the downbeat. But it's kind of in the middle where you start the figure. And you listen to it. It's so, I mean, he was beyond.
He was great.
He was incredible. I mean, he drove those guys nuts.
Have you ever seen, there's a footage of him and Art Blakey playing
together. Yeah, the drummer.
It's incredible.
It's insane.
He's more than holding his own.
Oh, well, you know, he had that whole style.
Doesn't he do a scene with Elvin Jones, too? I thought there was one with Elvin Jones.
It might be just audio. I don't know if there's any actual video footage. I'm going to have to look for that.
One of the bands I work with, I feel I should mention, which was cutting edge at the time in the 90s, was Rhythm Cats Review.
Oh, okay.
And it was managed by Rick Green, Midnight Sun, but it was run by Gary Lee. It was his concept. And it was a little similar to In the Pocket, but not quite. It was one of these one rhythm section that never moved.
Yeah.
And multiple singers would run us.
Well, it's kind of, we did. I think what made In the Pocket, I think, listen, it's all about timing. When I did In the Pocket, what really motivated me to do it more than anything was telling the story of the song, of whoever played on the song. And so if you recall, albums, people weren't buying, now they're buying albums, but they weren't buying albums then. And you'd get an MP3 file or a WAV file, and you listen to it, and you'd go, who the hell played on this? And who did this and that on the record? And I grew up, when I used to love looking at album jackets and reading credits and knowing, like, hey,
there you go.
There you go. My favorite drummer's playing on it, or you know what I mean? Exactly, right? I want to read liner notes. So really, In the Pocket, which it's similar to a lot of these projects that people have done, but I just kind of thought, hey, let's make it so it's a history lesson, because the one thing that did happen was, I got a lot of younger people that came up after we did. They would say, I didn't know that song. I didn't know like that guy played on that. I said, yeah, well, we don't get that information anymore.
Right.
You know, it's coming back because of albums and people are getting back into it. But
it was nice because you also had cats like TJ Tyndall. You know what I mean?
It was Philly centric. It was definitely
Philly. That's the real stuff there.
But we didn't start. It wasn't like I was reinventing the wheel. But in the case of the story, that's what was essential to me. That's what I wanted to do, to tell a story.
But the Rhythm Cat thing, that's where I got to meet other people. Like Quincy grew up side by side with the A's, almost as competing bands. But now I got to play with Richard Bush. You know, that's where I kind of met Chris Day and Richard Bush. And
Andy King.
Bands used to do that, though, back in the day. I think it was more... I remember because I'm just kind of someone that I like people. So generally, like I've never had like an adversary thing with band guys, other bands. But I remember, I think, you know, I felt like we were all competing for the same piece of cheese.
Well, that's why back in the day. That's why when we're doing the pocket thing and we're up in that dressing room and it's all filled up with
us. It's awesome.
It's so awesome because it's like, hey, we're still here. We're survivors. Yeah. And we're making this music together. Right and it's like I remember having a beer with you at this place 35 years ago and we were talking some shit about this or that. And here we are doing it again, you know?
No, I mean, look, man, the fact that you can hang and do things. I mean, I'm getting a real lesson in yesterday, you know, Eric came in Bazillion and he said to Dylan, he said, mentioned Brian Auger to Dylan. And he goes, but Dylan didn't know who Brian Auger was.
Right.
He goes, well, you know who Keith, he goes, yeah, I know who Keith Emerson is. He goes, well, but Brian Auger was the guy that, you know, kind of inspired Keith Emerson, you know, like, you know, and then because Brian had more of that jazz thing going on.
Yeah.
Brian Auger and the Trinity, right?
He employed Rod Stewart. Rod Stewart was in his band as a teenager.
And Brian Auger's band, Tony. Right?
Yeah, Rod Stewart.
Ferroni played drums for him on some records.
Who did?
Stephen Ferroni.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. I mean, that stuff was just...
Oblivion Express, I believe.
And amazing. I mean, look, man, you know, the fact is that you get, I mean, I mentioned, like, you keep your brain going by, you're playing and you're doing things and it keeps you fresh. But, you know, I like to reflect on some of those old, you know, those things that you did on those Tuesday nights and getting together and having to perform on the fly. It was just great for your mind and everything. It kept you going.
The cool thing with this Oregon Trio residency is because I'm mixing up other people and mostly it's theme. These guys are a little more jazz and swing. These guys are a little more rock, jazz rock. These guys the guys next week got a little more funky R&B. So I'm trying to put people together and give it some kind of a theme and everything. But the beauty is there are some songs that I'm going to play with all the different rhythm sections.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I'll be able to, in my brain, be it like, oh, we did this song. Now these guys did it this way. These guys did it this way.
That's cool.
And it's
are you recording it? I mean, because that you should think
that
about
that was my question.
There's a little bit that came from the first one with Greg Davis and Tom Walling, because Greg's my boy. We're gonna do some more. I think we might do March 13th back there again. But I definitely I recorded the entire set with Kevin and Eric, and it was just like
amazing.
It was so much fun. I mean, you know, for me to play the organ, which was my dad's, I got from my dad in the 70s, you know, and play with these guys I haven't played with in 20 years.
Fun. You had I mean, it's amazing. Your career, and it's still like you're still doing great things, you know, it's really cool. Speaking of some reason, like a Smash Palace, I want to play something. I think you sent My Mistake.
Which was a Will Whitman production, I think.
William Whitman is like always great.
Yeah.
And you could hear the keys real nice. There's a. Why don't you play a little bit of that, Taylor, so we can flavor this?
Piano.
Yeah.
MP3s. Thrill.
So hard to remember best days of my life with you. Can't believe it when you tell me this time together now are through.
Yeah.
You say the pain won't last for long. You say I just have to be strong. But what would you know about that when you're the one who put me down and left me flat?
I don't think it's on that album, though. I think it's on the other one.
It's Franny on there, right? On that one? I think
it is Fran playing bass on that one. That's it. You know, it's time flies, man. You know, you look back when we do that, you know, it's crazy. It's like,
Fran and I were in a band at like seven.
Didn't you play in a band with him called, was it the Bear? Were you in Dancing Bear?
No. I was before that in a band called Scarecrow.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I mean, we
did about a year and a half, 2 years. Mostly Jersey, a little bit. We played in Levittown once in a while.
You know, Fran's 105, you know.
I know.
You never know. I mean, that guy's got it's amazing. But I miss him. He's not living in the area right now, so it's kind of, I miss not.
My first studio recordings were with Fran in that band back. And I have those two tracks that we did a couple years ago. Before the tape was completely disintegrating, I made a transfer and I sent them all. About that.
I mean, there are so many. I'm looking at a reel right now that I have with our friend John Kuzma, Bobby Woods, Danny DeGennaro, and Dan D'Souza that I got to get transferred over. It's a little, I think it's a quarter inch. We used to bounce the quarter inch back when we used to go two inch. We were recording. We used to bounce down, and I got these mixes that I got to, but back then, I mean, we weren't cutting to a click or anything like that. We were going in the studio. We weren't. I mean, we could have, but we went in the studio. We didn't know. Mike Nice had a recording studio there.
Yes.
You ever worked there, Freddie? It was like,
yes, in his like parents' living room or something.
Yeah, I went over there. We cut this track. We cut, I don't know. Well, we cut something there. And then this other, well, the stuff that I have here was all at John Mulhern's place. And I got to mention real quickly, I got a phone call from a mutual friend of ours, Fred, Mikey Jr. He's calling me today.
Quarter of one
to chat about, like, I'm doing this thing for the Danny DeGennaro Foundation
on
April 25th. And so I'm going to sit in with like a couple different guys and play. But
that's how I know, Mike, through Danny and John Kuzma and Bubba.
Oh my God.
Did a gig with them up in Levittown. And Mikey was like 16 years old.
Yeah. Hey, one more guy I want to mention. I worked with this guy a couple times in the last few years. He's a blues singer from Philly, and he passed away about a year and a half ago. His name is Frank Bay.
Oh, yeah.
God, that guy was great. He was great, man.
World class.
He used to do the Staples song, Eye on the Prize. You know, he had his chair. He'd come out and he'd sit down and he would like hold court with the audience as like a traditional blues singer with some gospel background. I don't know why I've been thinking about him lately, but he was great. So many people we've lost so many people over the years, and like this guy, I was so lucky that I got asked to do a handful of those gigs. I got Jeff Monjack was his guitarist.
His band leader.
That's
great. Yeah.
And he was just a guy, Frank Bay, really. He meant a lot to me. It was good.
Jeff played with the Underwoods too, I believe. Jeff did.
Yeah, Jeff's been around. He played with Calvin Weston. I also worked with Calvin. So.
Yeah, that's amazing, Wally.
I mean, we worked with everybody.
So many things. Well, you know, so many things. That's why I was like, I was thinking about it. I'm going, you know, I hang with Wally. You know, we hang. But I don't know, you know, I mean, there were so many things I didn't know about experiences or even, you know, I didn't know your father did what he did. And, you know, it's kind of stuff you go play and you don't really know what, you know, we've all lived like these long lives. You certainly have. And now it was really remarkable that people, I don't know if they know about what you do, what you're teaching and how much you give away to these young people with your experiences. I don't think they know.
14 years at the school now.
Wow.
Yeah, and you do the adult class as well too,
Yeah, I run the adult program, and
you know,
believe me, the kids are easier.
Well, you know what? You know what's amazing though? You know, and I'm not saying it because they sponsor the podcast, but Dave and Rick are really great because you know they open the, like, if we need to rehearse or use the stage or do anything, they've been terrific. And they do, and they really, I see how they are with those students, man. They, I studied a different way. I was like Freddie, you know, we took drum lessons from people. Like, it wasn't about what happens at the, with School of Rock that I see a lot with they soak it in. You soak in the music, you get a guitar lesson, but they're inundated with the music, and it's almost like, okay, you got somebody coaching you and mentoring you and learning, teaching you, but a lot of it happens through being around it almost hourly, and then all of a sudden you see these kids, they're playing, they're hearing, it's like they get ear training, and they start figuring it out. I mean, it's amazing. Some get it faster than others, I wasn't totally on board with that because, okay, we're going to do another thing here, like work on that. But it really is a method that I find very interesting to this day, you know, how it works out there, man.
It's great when you do the shows and the shows are done, and then you go do what I call the gauntlet. You stand at the door when people are exiting, and all the various parents are like, you know, they're like, my God, my kid is up there with all his friends, and they're like really shining, you know, and they're so happy that their children are excelling, and there's, you know, they're shaking your hand. Right, it's awesome. It's totally awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is amazing. Hey, listen, and you guys got anything that you want? Look, you got the residency going on. Freddie, are you right now? Are you out playing anywhere? Are you doing anything right now? Working on the band. You got a record. You're working on this thing with Brendan.
Doing that.
A lot of talk about that.
Fiction.
Very cool. That's
got
cool,
a single dropping called Rumble in honor of Muhammad Ali's, I guess, 50th anniversary of winning first championship.
Yeah.
Knocking out Sonny Liston. So we got that.
Yeah, that's cool, man. And I was talking to Brendan about that. You said, I wasn't aware when I did your podcast that all those guys I was podcasting with were their bandmates.
Yeah.
Which was super cool. They're all super cool.
Yeah.
You know, and, it was a real honor to be on that talking about drum fills and stuff. You got to check that out.
Drum fills. Yeah, great.
It's good. And so Wally has their residency.
I'll be there Sunday. I'll be at 118 North and Wayne on Sunday with Loose on a Right Guitar, Sam McElvain.
Yeah.
A drummer's from a band called The Sermon. He's this funky, cool cat named Mike Mintz. So that's happening this Sunday at 4:00 in Wayne. And then
Wally, it's on the stage right there where we play, right?
Yeah, right there. Same where Smash plays.
Okay, cool.
And then in a month, we got all of March, starting with you, Dave, and Kenny Aronson, and me and Greg Sover.
That'd be fun. Hey, Freddie, if you're itching to come and play a tune or two.
All right.
I'm allowed to say that, Wally. I know it's your gig, because while we're in from the same stock, you know, me and this guy. So if he comes, it'd be great to see him too.
I could lay down and shuffle right-handed.
Yeah.
It don't matter.
Play percussion, though. You come.
Open hand. Lefty, whatever.
Lefty.
Yeah. Well, listen, man, I want to thank you so much for coming on, man.
Sure.
You know, it's like there's no agenda. It's like I want to have people come on and just hang out, have a cup of coffee. And, you know, we talk music. It's a great little hang. I want to thank our sponsors. I want to thank the School of Rock. I want to thank Kroger Percussion. I want you guys to go check out Pocket Percussion, my friends down there in Willow Grove. Got a great drum store, and they just move. It's going to be rocking. Go see Wally on Sunday, his residency. I think that's it for now. We'll see you next time.
All right, guys. Thank you so much, Davey.
Thank you, Wally.
Thanks, Fred.
Thank you, Freddie.
Wonderful.
Thanks, Taylor.